Greetings all, welcome back to another episode of the China History Podcast. As usual, Laszlo Montgomery here with another random topic from Chinese history. This week we're going to look at Taoism and try and explain what it's sort of about, where it came from, and just some general info and mostly historical background. It's a heavy subject, as all philosophies and religions tend to be, so I'm going to try and focus just on the history and basic details about how it all started. And then later on in another episode, we'll delve a little deeper and look at the gods, spirits, and rituals. Will Durant said it best when he said, "Lao Tzu, the greatest of the pre-Confucian philosophers, was wiser than Deng Xi. He knew the wisdom of silence and lived, we may be sure, to a ripe old age, though we are not sure he lived at all." And to quote Will Durant again from Volume 1 of his 11-volume masterpiece on the story of civilization, "Tradition, which knows everything, credits him with his book, the Tao Te Ching, and his name, Lao Tzu, neither of which may have belonged to him." And that nearly sums it up as far as who Lao Tzu was, where he came from, and what he's famous for. That's the honest truth. No one knows for sure. After all, time in question is still the Bronze Age. It's ancient China. 500-600 years before Christ. So much was still a mystery to all men, no matter in China or elsewhere. In the age of the ancient Zhou dynasty, Chinese civilization had had the benefits of writing since at least Shang oracle bone days. And by the time of the Zhou kings, the writing had developed, and educated men are spinning that magic with the language that great writers can do. And you have a lot of writing gushing forth during these Zhou dynasty times, trying to explain the unknown. There were a lot of questions about nature, about man's place in nature, man's relationship to his fellow human, and man's destiny and purpose. So now, in the Zhou dynasty, people emerge whose attempts to explain everything, well, they're admired and studied by others, and it spreads throughout society. And this was the age of Lao Tzu, Confucius, and the hundred schools of thought. Now, I know you know all this, but I'm going to say it anyway for those who forgot. We're in the feudal period of China. Qin Shi Huangdi, the first emperor of China, is still more than 3.5 centuries in the future. The Zhou was the longest dynasty in Chinese history. From stem to stern, it ran from 1046 BC to 256 BC, a grand total of 790 years. But you all know the Zhou dynasty, as founded by the Ji family, they were pushed aside by 771 BC. And starting right after that, we have the so-called Eastern Zhou dynasty, also called the Later Zhou. It's divided up into the Spring and Autumn period, which lasted till approximately 475 BC, and the Warring States period, which picked up right where the Spring and Autumn left off, until just before Qin Shi Huang unified the country in 221 BC. As a point of reference to what was going on concurrently in the Western world, this time of Lao Tzu and Confucius, this is just prior to the classical period in Greece, the period that brought us Sophocles, Socrates, Homer, Herodotus, Plato, Aristotle. This is 5th century Greece. The time that Lao Tzu supposedly lived and when Confucius walked the earth was just about the same time, give or take a few decades. The Roman Republic was just about to get started right about now as well. All the good stuff, Lao Tzu, Confucius, the whole hundred schools of thought, all went down during this ancient period, during the Spring and Autumn period, of course, named for the Chunqiu, or Spring and Autumn Annals of Confucius. It was a rough era to be living in, but it yielded quite a rich treasure as far as Chinese philosophy is concerned. You know, basically, all we have is the Tao Te Ching and the Chuangzi, and that's about it. The Tao Te Ching is a little more than 5,000 characters in length, and like the Bible or Quran, you can sort of interpret it in a bunch of different ways. You can pretty much take it anywhere you want to take it. Did Lao Tzu write it? Did Lao Tzu ever live? Who knows? This was really a momentous work, and it spawned so much thought and so many customs and traditions that became part of the fabric of Chinese civilization and how it developed over the next 2,000 years. This is especially so when you look at the Chinese countryside. There are a multitude of gods and spirits and interesting characters who all came from various parts of China. And these tales of spirits and extraordinary powers, they all naturally sort of gravitated towards Taoism. And Taoism absorbed these many beliefs, synthesized them, and incorporated them into the Taoist religion. This short work, the Tao Te Ching, has to be attributed to someone. Someone had to conveniently exist who could be quoted and referred to. Lao Tzu could have been an amalgamation of several people who yielded all this wisdom and sayings over time. The Tao Te Ching might simply be this collection of all this wisdom in one single work. Let's quickly take a look at Lao Tzu's name. Now, in the Wei Jiao system of romanization, his name is spelled Lao-TZU. So any reader of the English alphabet of sane mind and all their faculties about them would read this as Lao Tzu. Nothing wrong with that, no big deal. So the writer to whom the Tao Te Ching is credited, he's pretty much been Lao Tzu to the West, at least since the 19th century. In any case, tradition says his surname was Li, and his full name was Li Er. Half the sources I use said Lao Tzu lived in the 4th century BC, the other half said the 6th century BC. The authority on all things philosophical and historical, Melvin Bragg, in his December 16th in Our Time podcast, said the 6th century. Taoism isn't a monotheistic religion that ever talked about or mentioned a supreme anthropomorphic god. It's a polytheistic religion involving a multitude of gods. There aren't any prayers or hymns like we do have in other religions. The concept of dharma in Hinduism is sometimes loosely compared to the Tao. Today we're going to sort of dissect it a little and not get too into the actual writings of the Tao Te Ching, but instead look at the history of Taoism and some basic explanations about what it's all about and maybe how it got off the ground and developed in China. It's sort of part intellectual, philosophical, part spiritual, religious, and lastly, Taoism is part rich folk tradition that varied from region to region of China. It was all of these things. The symbol of Taoism is the well-known, recognizable, and downright iconic yin and yang symbol that you're all familiar with that represents the balance of opposites in the universe. Now that we got Lao Tzu out of the way, I'll give you Chinese lesson numero zwei. Tao, D-A-O. As with the name of the old master, Lao Tzu, the whole study of Taoism has grown up since time immemorial, spelling Tao as Tao, T-A-O. So thanks to Thomas Wade and Herbert Giles, just as Lao Tzu is referred to commonly as Lao Tzu, so is Tao called Tao. And the Tao Te Ching, it's known as the Tao Te Ching. Tao, fourth tone, De, second tone, and Ching, first tone. Tao Te Ching. I have to admit, as soon as I went from source to source and researched the meaning of Tao as it relates to Taoism, they lost me right away. The way is explained, it's so, wow, man, yeah, I could totally dig it. You know, there's no easy tell-all definition. Let me give you the clinical definition of the character Tao, fourth tone. It means road, way, or path. It also means way in the sense of method. This character can also mean doctrine or principle. And of course, after all these years, it also means Taoism. It can also mean line, like draw a line on a paper. In banquets, it could also mean, well, it's a counter for courses, like an 8-course dinner. Ba dao cai de wan fan. Tao would also be used in this case. But as far as Taoism is concerned, definition number one is the one that counts. Road, way, or path. In the Taoist sense, when you say the way, what you actually mean is the way of nature, the great cosmic harmony. At its most raw and basic level, Taoism calls for mankind to live modestly and in tune with nature and his surroundings. Nature and the cosmos have their way about them, and Taoism is all about how to follow that way and maintain balance and harmony in the world. The Tao Te Ching is the roadmap or the guide that puts all the meat on the bones and helps to explain this mysterious and cosmic power that's present in all natural things. It offers a primer on the proper conduct individuals should take. There are plenty of bad guys in Taoism. Intellectuals are not admired. Unlike Confucianism, to be learned and a scholar is completely of no use. In fact, Taoism considers the learned man a detriment to the state, since he thinks in legalist principles that go completely against natural freedom and suppresses mankind rather than benefits mankind. Everything was great when everything was simple, before the days when men attained certain knowledge and began organizing societies and building cities. Taoism, I guess, ultimately called a perfect world, one where man never interfered with nature, used his intelligence or power to scheme his schemes, and, as Ned Beatty so eloquently and aptly put it back in the 1976 film Network, meddle with the primal forces of nature. Nature, in the Taoist sense, means natural activity, how everything flows in nature, all the seasonal cycles, the stars, the moon, the rainy season, the dry season, everything that is of nature that's unchanging. Taoism embraces all of that unreservedly. One of the holy grails of Taoism is to truly understand this nature, and the only way to understand it is to flow with it. How you flow with it, well, that's where Taoism gets very, very intricate and complex. It's all about quiescence, being quiet, inactive, dormant, refusing to interfere with the natural course of things. Practicing Taoism is all about this. Sounds simple, but it isn't. This concept of quiescence and going with the flow in Chinese also has a name, and this is called wu wei. If you look up wu wei in a Chinese dictionary, it says inaction. Wu wei is a hard one to really understand and get your arms around, especially in this 21st century hyper-materialistic world we live in. To practice wu wei in everything you do, which is what Lao Tzu essentially calls for, you achieve action through inaction. By practicing wu wei, you can utilize the power of emptiness, detachment, receptiveness, spontaneity, the relationship between all humans and the search for long life. Wu wei touches on all of this. Taoism warns against the self-defeating consequences of being aggressive and assertive to get your way or to act in any way that can be construed to be self-aggrandizing, no matter if you're a nation, an army, or just an individual member of the human race. To quote Lao Tzu, or what Lao Tzu was purported to have said, "If you do not quarrel, no one on earth will be able to quarrel with you. Recompense injury with kindness. To those who are good, I am good. To those who are not good, I am also good. The softest thing in the world dashes against and overcomes the hardest. There is nothing softer or weaker than water. And yet for attacking things that are firm and strong, there is nothing that can take precedence of it." Taoism calls for man to embrace a world of simplicity and silence. Wisdom in the Taoist sense isn't read in books or communicated by speech. A true follower of Taoism holds riches and power as unimportant. In short, it totally and wholeheartedly embraces a simple life. Now let's pull back a minute and see why. Why would Lao Tzu, or whoever Lao Tzu was, call so eloquently to look back on simpler times when humans were more in daily touch with the natural forces of nature? Maybe he said this because these were rough times. It was the Eastern or later Zhou period. China under the Western Zhou kings had been broken up since 722 BC, at least. From that point on, it was every man for himself, and all these little kingdoms that were part of the feudal system in China, they spent the next several hundred years playing rock'em sock'em robots with each other until 221 BC, when there's finally one ring to rule them all, and Qin Shi Huang comes out on top. So in short, these were not the best of times, the Eastern Zhou period. No matter the spring and autumn or warring states portion of the Eastern Zhou, times were rough, and when times are unbearable, it's common in every generation for people to reminisce about the old days when life wasn't so complex like it is now, with so many pressures all bearing down at the same time. And 2,500 years ago, it was, well, only natural that man was less removed from nature than today. Living in tune with nature was more fresh in the memories and traditions of Zhou Dynasty Chinese than in these modern times. So when all of a sudden Taoist beliefs become more widespread and popularized, Taoism acts as a kind of black hole where these thousand-year-old or more folk traditions from the Shang Dynasty and earlier They just gravitated towards that force and became one with it. Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching was written as a reaction against these times in feudal China and the wholesale disruption to society that came with it. He saw this wisdom as a way to reverse the backward slide that China was in. By following the teachings contained in the Tao Te Ching, Lao Tzu offered a certain remedy to the problems of endless warfare and inhumane treatment that came in the wake of these battles. That's essentially what Lao Tzu set out to do. In 1993, by the way, in the town of Guodian, near Jingmen in Hubei, west of Wuhan, the oldest copy of the Tao Te Ching was found, which dated to somewhere around 300 BC. So it goes back, to the very least, to this time. Rousseau, Thoreau, and countless others made this call to follow nature's laws. According to Sima Qian, there was one time when supposedly Confucius met Lao Tzu. They were of a similar time period, though Lao Tzu came first. As Sima Qian explained, Confucius sought out Lao Tzu's advice about some matter pertaining to history or ritual or something like that. Lao Tzu's reply was, "The men about whom you talk are dead, and their bones are moldered to dust. Only their words are left. Moreover, when the superior man gets his opportunity, he mounts aloft. But when the time is against him, he is carried along by the force of circumstances. I have heard that a good merchant, though he has rich treasures safely stored, appears as if he were poor, and that the superior man, though his virtue be complete, is yet too outward seeming stupid. Put away your proud air and many desires, your insinuating habit and wild will. They are of no advantage to you. This is all I have to tell you." Confucius was so struck by these words of wisdom that he declared, "I know how birds can fly, fishes swim, and animals run. But the runner may be snared, the swimmer hooked, and the flyer shot by the arrow. But there is the dragon. I cannot tell how he mounts on the wind through the clouds and rises to heaven. Today I have seen Lao Tzu and can only compare him to the dragon." And that was the first and last time Confucius allegedly met Lao Tzu. When we talk about Taoism, the two central characters are Lao Tzu, who we already mentioned. The second person tied to Taoism is Zhuang Zi. The two essential works of Taoism are the Tao Te Ching and the Zhuang Zi. Zhuang Zi being the name of the philosopher credited with writing it, as well as the name of the work. Lao Tzu is considered the founder, and Zhuang Zi is considered the greatest disciple, or person that most represented what Taoism was all about. Now, you also have the less famous Lietzi. Lietzi is the third sacred work of Taoism. Since Zhuang Zi mentioned the Lietzi in his work, the order of appearance of the three great works of Taoism are Tao Te Ching, Lietzi, and Zhuang Zi. The Lietzi is only 8 chapters and is perhaps the most accessible and straightforward of the three works, though you should still keep your cliff notes close at hand. Now, as far as the actual writing of the Tao Te Ching, well, most all China scholars say this is all a bunch of BS, but I'm going to tell it to you anyway. The legend regarding how it came to be written went like this. Lao Tzu, he was a curator at the Royal Library of Zhou. This would have been around the middle or late middle of the Eastern Zhou, maybe the last half century of the Spring and Autumn period. Spring and Autumn is just beginning to merge into the Warring States period right about now. It was the time of Zhou Linwang. He was the 11th king of the Eastern Zhou. We call it the Eastern Zhou because the capital was at Luoyang in Henan, rather than to the west in Haojing, near Shanxi, near Xi'an. Lao Tzu got so fed up with the deteriorating situation and how kings were more interested in fighting battles than caring for the people and how society was degrading. So Lao Tzu decides to opt out. He leaves his post and heads west to the outer frontiers of what was then part of China that made up the Eastern Zhou. As he gets to the very, very end of the frontier, the last step before you left what was considered Zhongguo, or China, The guard there, a gentleman by the name of Yan Xi, he recognizes Lao Tzu because his fame had preceded his arrival at the frontier gate. After Lao Tzu tells Yan Xi he's had enough, he's giving up on the wickedness and brutality of the times and was just going to wander the western regions and live like a hermit. Yan Xi says to Lao Tzu, "Oh, I beseech you, before you go, wise Lao Tzu, please give me your wisdom." And so, according to tradition, Lao Tzu sits down and writes out 5,000 plus Chinese characters and hands it to Yan Xi, and that, my friends, was the Tao Te Ching, Lao Tzu's antidote to the slide into chaos that the Eastern Zhou dynasty was facing. And then, as legend has it, he departed and was never heard from again. One interesting point to note is when it all started, no one at the time was identifying the Tao Te Ching or Lao Tzu or anything about this philosophy as Taoism. That came later. Lao Tzu produced the Tao Te Ching, Zhuang Zi perfected the interpretation, and through his work made it more accessible and defined. But it wasn't until the Han Dynasty that the whole shebang was sort of organized and identified as Tao Jiao, or Taoism. Actually, the Chinese is Tao Jiao for the Taoist religion, and Tao Jia for philosophical Taoism. Not until the Celestial Masters came into being did Taoism start to coalesce as a religion and a movement. Up until these guys came along at the start of the Eastern Han Dynasty, around the time of the Guangwu Emperor, Guangwu Di, there was no organized Taoism. It was something that had been spread, evolved, and now comes the Han Dynasty, which is a breath of fresh air after the very, very unpleasant years, short though they may have been, of the Qin Dynasty. And along comes the first of the great celestial masters who is going to really kickstart Taoism as a movement. Celestial masters, I don't know, I guess you could think of them as the pope of the particular Taoist sect they represent. And the very first celestial master, the one who is most credited with organizing all Taoist beliefs, gods, folk customs, everything, was Zhang Daoling. He formed the Taoist sect known as the Way of the Celestial Master, Tian Shi Dao, also known as the Wu Dou Mi Dao. Wu Dou Mi means five pecks. Mi is rice, and Dao, of course, is the way. The Way of the Five Pecks, because if you wanted to join that sect, you had to donate five pecks of mi, rice. How much is that? If one peck is 8.81 liters, times five, roughly 44 liters or 1.55 cubic feet of rice you had to donate in order to get into the club. So anyone could join who had Wu Dou Mi. So during the Eastern Han, which are the years AD 23 to 230, this is the period where the Roman Empire is at its height of power. And in fact, when the Eastern Han is coming to a close, Rome has already peaked and is into its slow, agonizing decline. So, 142 AD, Zhang Daoling sets up the Way of the Celestial Master, or the Five Pecks of Rice, and we have the beginning of a religious Taoist order, the first organized Taoist community located out in Sichuan province. In this period of disunity, where there is no central Chinese government ruling everything, what Zhang Daoling set up in the north part of Sichuan was a full-on theocratic state. In 215, this state merges with Cao Cao's Kingdom of Wei. This is just around the time when the Eastern Han is coming to an end and morphing into the Three Kingdoms era. Once this sect of Taoism is absorbed into Cao Cao's world, it spreads quickly all over China. And Cao Cao, you all remember from the Three Kingdoms period. Zhang Daoling's Way of the Celestial Master, the first Taoist sect, they were all about qi. The qi. Qi was everything. What does qi mean? Another hard one to define. I mean, it's an everyday character. It would be almost be impossible for a Chinese to go through a day without uttering that one syllable. Kong qi, which means air. Ke qi, polite. Bu yao ke qi, you're welcome. Qi means air, gas, breath, smell, spirit. It also means to get angry or to bully. In Taoism, it's the breathing definition that most matters. And the whole discipline of Qigong. Qigong has been around since the time of the legendary Yellow Emperor, founder of the Han race. These Qigong breathing exercises had long preceded Laozi, going back to the beginning of Chinese civilization up through the time when Laozi and Zhuangzi were walking this earth before the organized Taoism that arose during the Eastern Han. The local religion was good old, reliable shamanism, and the priests were those shamans who basically communicated with the spiritual world. They were what we might also call medicine men. All these shamanistic traditions were pretty well developed and indelibly entrenched among the local populace when Taoism came along. And way before Laozi, there was an already well-entrenched belief in some kind of afterlife and ancestor worship and rituals to express that belief. There was praying to these unknown forces that controlled nature. There had to be. In those days, people's lives depended on the weather. Every summer, including this one, there's always one horrific drought or another somewhere in the United States. Unfortunately, sometimes people perish in the heat. It's terribly uncomfortable, and people have to make adjustments in their life, but it's not the end of the world. Back in ancient times, it pretty much was the end of the world. So people really needed to use the power of prayer just for their own survival against the forces of nature. The weather cycles meant everything. And if the cycles were regular and food was plentiful, or if there were disasters or unexplained natural phenomena, the people needed some kind of deity or spirit who they could ascribe this power to. And it's these rich shamanistic traditions practiced by the people that had plenty of time to commingle with Taoist beliefs. And this is where you see all the Taoist gods and rituals that we'll discuss next time. Shamanistic values such as nature and creating harmony with your surroundings, these very easily meshed with the ideas Laozi wrote in the Tao Te Ching. Laozi, by the way, came from the state of Chu, which was mostly in today's Jiangsu province. Going back to Qin Shi Huang, you recall there were seven warring states. The Chu state was one of them, and of course it's the Qin state that conquers the other six. Anyway, the Chu state had a particularly rich shamanistic tradition, and this is where Laozi came from, if he actually, well, anyway. Zhang Daoling establishes the Way of the Celestial Master in 142 AD, the year, by the way, that Wei Boying described for the first time the chemical mixture of gunpowder. Celestial Master Zhang is communicating with the spirit of Laozi and organizing these constantly evolving cacophony of local beliefs. All manners of rituals are developed. Everything that is so interesting about Taoism, the alchemy part, the search for longevity, and ways to utilize the Tao to achieve eternal youth, their sexual prowess, Qigong. Now it really starts to become a more defined religion, and a whole collection of beliefs and traditions that start to penetrate to the very soul of Chinese popular culture. Next time we look at other aspects of Taoism, we'll see how it developed in the period after the Han Dynasty. We'll trace its developments to later dynasties, and we'll see as Buddhism slowly spreads in China how Taoism and Buddhism came into frequent conflict with each other as priests, practitioners, and monks from both religions fought these protracted, behind-the-scenes battles for control of the hearts and minds of the emperor and the imperial court. Sometimes the Taoists were on top, and sometimes they fell from favor, and Buddhist monks had their way. We'll see this especially come the Tang Dynasty. In 440 AD, during the Southern and Northern Dynasties period, Taoism actually becomes a state religion for the first time, and we'll look at all that stuff. For now, the objective of this episode was to sort of get a general idea of how Taoism came about and to examine this proto-Taoism period. I wanted to introduce who were the revered figures, what were the texts, how do you pronounce these names, and what it was generally all about. Next time we'll look at the Taoist gods and a little about the role many of these gods play in Chinese culture. Today I just wanted to lay the groundwork, and next week we'll check out some more history of Taoism and take a peek inside and try to make sense of what it's all about. Anyone who wants to take the plunge, I encourage you to go online to Google Books or any number of websites and read the Tao Te Ching. It's not going to take up a lot of your time. There might be a lesson or two contained inside that could apply to you. The one I like to read, it's not a conventional version, it's by a great writer, Stephen Mitchell. Two books, the Tao Te Ching and the second book of the Tao, a cherished gift from my most spiritual and dearest friends, Michael, out in the Green Mountain State of VT. And that's going to be all she wrote for today, as it always seems to be. This is your host and humble narrator, Laszlo Montgomery, signing off from the town of Claremont, California. Carmageddon here in L.A. has come and gone and turned out to be much ado about nothing. They should call this one Y2K the second. Take care, all, and I hope you're enjoying your summer and that you'll listen next week for another exciting episode of the China History Podcast.